Hey, Rob, it's Sean.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm well. How you doing?
Good, good. Is Rob going to be on?
He should be, yeah. Spoke to him earlier. How are you continuing to hold up, Rob?
I'm doing great.
Good.
I'm creating my own mastermind group for the first time, which is kind of fun.
Very nice.
I've actually got kind of three big projects going on. And, you know, I teach this stuff, but I don't always do it, right?
Right.
How are you guys doing?
Business wise, we continue to do really well. In fact, we had, two referrals that, we've closed both of those in the last month, which
great.
Has been nice. Yeah. To be able to do that, in this new remote world, I said that's both encouraging and troubling. That we can hold conversations with people we've never met face to face and have them move $3 to $4 million to us. But I guess that's the world we live in.
I think a lot of people continue to deal with that, Rob.
I'm sorry.
I say I think a lot of people like it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're continuing to deal with a lot of internal problems, with management and turnover here internally, technology issues that have caused a reduction in client confidence in a couple of areas. It's been challenging the last month or a couple of positions we've had to deal with. Again, all brought on by internal management issues and lacks of checks and balances, which has been frustrating. And then even some, recent comments that were made by our new CEO as it relates to social change and really, really unfortunate that it seems like folks at the top of the house can't get out of their way, that ultimately feeds down to the people who are speaking to clients and just makes our job that much tougher when we have to stop what we're doing and address those issues.
Well, I mean, regarding that comment, I mean, the problem with the comment was if it had been made like it was by me 15 years ago, it would have been relevant. But that's been the most obvious thing in the world, is that the pool's too small.
Right.
Now, how are you going to make the pool bigger? That's
right.
That's what I've been working on it for 15 years. And it's not an easy thing, but I think this, Black Lives Matter thing has brought all the people that can actually make a difference together to create the opportunity to make the pool bigger. Otherwise, you just couldn't get people off their ass. They just, now.
Exactly.
Finally, they're off their ass and they're actually going to they're putting money into it. They're going to put effort into it and it's going to make a difference and we'll get the pool bigger. So it wasn't that the comment was wrong. It's just that it was, not relevant to today's world. Oh, yeah, we all know that. Hello.
Right. Just should have been more carefully thought out in terms of how that was said.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, right? The pool's too small.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah, right.
Hello, we know that. It isn't an indictment that they're not smart. It's just they don't think of this as a business that they can go into.
That's right.
They don't even think.
Exactly.
I've got a group that I'm working with now, and I'm the only white man in the committee. Originally, my foundation was designed and built to do this, to make the pool bigger, specifically for black males. But you know, I've strayed from it out of frustration to providing scholarships for all kinds of people. But, you know, my son-in-law said, read my mission statement and said, you know, I think we've strayed away from the mission statement. And at least if I'm going to be on this committee, I need to, we need to kind of talk about getting back to this. And I said, you're absolutely right. So I formed a committee made up of, my business partner is African American, Curtis Brown, and my, so we formed a kind of a group to come up with a plan that would specifically get people into our end of the business. Everybody does this, but they're all sending them to be analysts and investment bankers and traders and things like that. But nobody's sending them out to be financial advisors. And that's our mission, is to get high quality people trained so that they're very attractive to teams that can then hire them and make a difference. And so I don't know, we've been doing this for now 6 weeks, you know, 7 weeks, once a week. And, we all do homework on it and pull together different resources. And it's, I think we've kind of got it solved. Now we just have to, I'm going to try and train 50 financial advisors.
That's great.
Young men to be financial advisors. So we'll see what happens, but, my business partner's writing a business plan on it, and, I'm pulling together different resource people. He's got a mastermind group of all the black managers in the country. And I'm working with a sales manager in Charlotte, and I've coached African American teams. And so I've gone back to them and said, okay, this is our challenge. What do you think? And so we really have good ideas. It's not that hard. It just will take years to do it. That's the part.
Right.
People are, it's like investing. People don't think in terms of years. They think in terms
exactly.
of next month or this week earnings. And you got to think in terms of years. If we get guys that are sophomores and juniors in college and train them, you know, how many years before they really are going to make a difference and move the needle?
Yeah, it's
Well,
yeah, Rob and I say this all the time. When you go into a stock, you know, if you really want to own that and be an investor in that company, you got to treat it almost like you would a private equity position. Just the fact that, you know, you can see it on a single day move up and down really has no bearing on where you think the stock's going to be longer term.
Right.
And those short-term movements allow you to make, you know, probably dumb decisions in the short run. When if you just ignored it, put it in the sock drawer, woke up 3 years later, you'd feel a lot better and say, I can't believe the stock used to be at that level when I bought it.
You guys know.
The way you get there.
Yeah. By the way, it's just, you got some great companies around you, and most of them are in the defense, a lot of them in our, you know, in Virginia,
yeah.
defense contracting business. I just came up.
Yep.
I'm very interested in cyber, you know, I have different themes that I use for investing, right? And
yep.
one of them is cybersecurity, and I think the next big war that's going to be fought is going to be a cyber war. It's happening now. It hasn't been declared, but it's happening. And, you know, I've got a portfolio of stocks that, you know, like an ETF that I make up my own of cybersecurity stocks and companies. I came across a company that you might know that is in the cybersecurity business, but I think it's mostly for the Pentagon, which made it kind of like really kind of cool and spooky and everything. And I think it's in Arlington. It's called Mantech.
Yeah.
Do you know it?
We do. Yeah.
M-A-N-T, have you, I mean, this is what you're talking about. You know, I'm going to do the homework and I'll take a position and then I'll own it maybe forever if it's a good company.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, so people say, God, you have such a low cost base in XYZ. And I said, well, you know, I bought it in 1985.
You know, right.
And I've been adding to it over the years, and there's no reason I'm going to sell it because it's a great company. And so why would you, you know, my biggest positions happen to be the FANG stocks, not because I was a genius, but because I bought them years ago and I haven't sold them. So obviously they've grown and done well. So those are the companies that are, you know, a disproportionate size in my portfolio.
But that initial purchase over the next 6 months, you could look foolish.
Right.
The stock could easily go down 10, 15, 20%.
Right.
But
so
you have the same level of conviction that you bought today, and you know, you add to it because exactly, you believe in the business.
Right. So you say, okay, I'm right on the idea, one of the worst things to do is to be right on the idea, not own enough, right?
Exactly. Right. Yep.
So one of the things that I'll do is I will leg into it. So I'll take an initial position, and then I'll add to it till I get to my what I consider a core size position, and then I'll leave it go and see what happens. But you know, if it sells off after I buy it, I usually, you know, I'll add to it, and then it goes up
a little more. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter. I'm just testing the waters to see if there's, you know, you just sort of have to get used to owning something. So that's why that's why, you know, and I'll do things like this. Dad, do you know it? Do you know the company? What do you think? What do you know about it?
And Rob, can you give me 1 second? Rob he was having trouble getting in. Let me dial him in. Hold on 1 second. I'm just going to patch him into the conversation. Rob and Rob?
Yeah, hey.
Hey, Rob. Sorry about that. I had a guy call in. Sean, it was Greg Owen when I did an update. So obviously I didn't want to hang up on him mid stammering and stuttering. And then I had a hard time getting in. So my apologies, Rob.
No problem. We were just talking about long-term investment and, you know, how people really don't understand how to gain real wealth. And I thought,
not at all.
Here's an idea for you guys, since you're in that area and it's a company I'm just beginning to look at. And I think I found it over the weekend somewhere, Barron's or something I was reading. And it's a company called Mantech, because I'm interested in cybersecurity. And I guess they provide cybersecurity for the Pentagon and defense contractors. So I thought, that's Virginia. That's you guys. So, you know, I suggested CoStar, and of course that's been a huge winner. Much
it really has. Yeah.
Beyond what I ever imagined, but that's a perfect example. We were talking about building a position in a stock. You know, I dollar cost averaged into that over time, and now it's a core position, and it's frankly bigger than I ever estimated it would be. I sold half of it, to be honest with you, when this thing started, because I thought it would really damage companies that were in the real estate business, you know.
In the real estate, right.
You know, and it turned out I was completely wrong. But I still had, even if half of it, it's still a big position and I'm fine, you know, but so anyway, I looked at this Mantech and I have kind of a stock club or group that I work with. And this is going to be my idea for them. And I just figured you guys knew it there. I haven't bought any yet, but I'd like to. It just seems like it's in the right place, the right time with this whole cybersecurity wars. I mean, every day you pick up the paper and there's an attack on somebody. And I think that internationally, this is the kind of company that we're really dependent on to protect our cybersecurity for our defense contractors. So I don't know.
It'll be.
I think you're absolutely right.
It'll be interesting to see, Rob. You know, I think it's either tomorrow or Wednesday. Palantir goes public.
Yeah.
Silicon Valley company that was very heavily, up until a few years ago, their only contracts in terms of some of their data science software was only with the Pentagon, FBI, CIA. You know, they've recently branched out from there. And, you know, it's one of these companies that is, I don't necessarily say shunned Silicon Valley, but they just recently moved their headquarters to Denver. So it'll be interesting to see how a company like that, that has been, you know, really its grassroots are involved directly, you know, with the government, how they can make this transition to other sectors. But it'll be curious to see how they begin trading on their unique offering that they're having this week.
Now, will you guys get stock in that? Do you do new issues?
So this is not an IPO. It's a direct listing, which is, you know, a little bit of a different animal. So, yeah, you're going to see, you know, existing shares that are held with insiders, you know, positioned on the open market, and then, you know, they'll trade the way they do. You know, there's been a lot of talk recently, as you've probably seen, you know, new ways of companies going public, either whether it's, you know, through this direct offering or the SPAC, which has been, you know, extremely popular over the last couple of months. Curious to see how all of this impacts, you know, some of the big investment houses going forward in terms of revenues and dollars that have been created from underwriting. But we'll see.
Well, I guess they make money. They make plenty of money on these SPACs. They just, they're just a different way of issuing, you know, then the SPAC goes out and buys a company. So it's a, you know, it seems to be kind of hand in glove. I don't hear anybody bitching about SPACs. I think they like them. And you know, we did a bunch of, I just, you know, which tells you where we are in the market. I'm interested in new issues now.
We were going to have 12 new issues this week.
Right.
I think there's 12 new issues this week.
The market is able to absorb them, you know, which is startling.
Sure.
But anyway, here's, you know, when you're looking for a niche, maybe this ManTech is a new niche, right? A new company that you might
exactly,
you know, look at their executives as potential prospects and things like that. I think that would be... it'd be fascinating. You guys live in a fascinating area of the world, right? I mean, there's all the mystery, all the secret, secret shit going on. And anyway, this guy, I would bet that this would be a tough company to see anybody. You'd have to go through a lot of security.
Well, you know, Sean, as Rob's talking, I'm thinking about, we reach out to Barry Landu and ask him to help us out. One of our clients is a former CIA executive who now runs a consulting company, and it also kind of functions a bit as an incubator. And everybody who's involved in intelligence work in the technology arena, Barry probably knows him. Or he knows – he may not know him directly, but if I said, Barry, how can I meet these guys? He could probably tell us how to do it.
I think it's a brilliant idea, and they're not going to be on LinkedIn, okay?
Nope, not at all.
No, they're not.
It's the old thing, like I always joke around. I have a friend, and Rob, you probably can appreciate this, having spent time serving in the military. One of my friends was a Delta Force guy, and he was in counterterrorism and counterinsurgents and, I don't know, shit like that. And I asked him, he was in the Philippines once, and he was telling me about, oh, yeah, when I was in the Philippines, it was hot. It was mosquito. I said, what the hell were you doing in the Philippines? He said, oh, I worked for the Department of Agriculture. I said, what? You know, he's a Silicon Valley boy. He doesn't know anything about agriculture. He says, yeah, I was working for the Department of Agriculture, trying to, you know, figure out how to grow more pineapples in the Philippines. I said, okay. I guess that's code for you're not going to tell me.
Right. It's great, isn't it? It's very exciting.
Well, and I always say to Sean, thank God guys like him and guys like you were willing to do what you did so we could sit here and do what it is we do.
You know, when you're doing it, you don't even think about it. It's so weird. I said to my wife, the other day, at my age, I think back at, did I understand the risks I was taking and what I was putting myself through? And no, it was just one big great adventure. It had nothing to, you know, it was fun. It was pure fun. And, you know, was it risky? Sure. But did I think it was risky for me? No, it was risky for everybody else.
It's so funny because I said to my friend once, I said, John, how does a guy get you to go do something like that? He says, he gives you an order.
Right.
I said, okay, that's all it takes. Where, you know, here, and Sean and I laugh, here I say, hey, my laptop doesn't work. I need a new one. It's going to be 3 months. There's some guy tells you, hey, we're going to go drop you in this country, turning your dog tags and this and that, and we're leaving in 3 hours. Okay, got to go. Talk to you later.
Right.
It's a whole other world.
And it was fun. It was just fun. We had, you know, I don't know how it came up, but I said, you got to understand, you know, that I was truly, I mean, when you go in the service, you're hired to kill people.
Right.
I said, think about it. That's my job. Now I might be doing cyber something, or I might be flying an airplane, or I might be, but everybody there is there to protect the country, and they're paid and given a license that if they have to, they can kill people. And you don't,
right.
You don't think about it. You know, you don't even think about it when you
no,
go.
Not at all.
But when you look back on, you know, we were all trained to kill people, and that was our job. It's kind of crazy.
Exactly. It's until you've got some time and distance and perspective that you say, oh, yeah, all right, now I understand it all.
Right. Anyway, so, yeah, go and prospect these guys. You know, I'm working with a guy.
That's great.
Guy just before you guys, and he's pissed off because he's growing twice as fast as his team, and he wanted to hire me privately to help him grow and to deal with the fact that he's on a team that's not growing. I mean, that they're not growing. And I said, you got to block out that shit. I said, just block it out. Block out all the crap and focus on you and hold yourself accountable. And you beat them with the numbers. You win with numbers. If you want more sales assistant support, do more business. You want to have a better split? Do more business. Don't spend 1 minute more than you have to dealing with things you can't control. Focus on what you can control and bring the fun back in the business. And that's, I mean, I know we all are dealing with shit, but at least give yourself a reasonable portion of every day where you're having fun. And fun is bringing in new money. Right. And scaring the shit out of yourself,
right.
Calling on people that are strangers. And that, you know, that's the fun.
You know, Rob, it's so funny. I just redid the bookshelves in my office. And I had a really interesting time putting books back away and reorganizing them. And, you know, I probably have 3,000 books. So it's taken me, you know, 2 weeks to do this. But I went back and, you know, Sean and I joke around a lot about it. Sean, I still have a copy of Leroy, whatever his last name was, How to Sell Intangibles.
Art of Selling Intangibles, yeah.
The Art of Selling Intangibles. And his rule number one, Rob, was hate everybody else in your office. Because he basically said, you know, they're there to steal your time and to bullshit. And every deal that gets one, you won't get. And so I thought, okay, well, that's a little old school. But it was all about cold calling and doing this and doing that. And when I got into the business back in the 90s, it was still about cold calling and how do you get a meeting? You know, I got a book up here, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. You know, the psychology of call reluctance. And, you know, I got a copy of Nick Murray's old book, The Game of Numbers.
Right.
And so then you start to see these books that say, cold calling doesn't work, networking this and that, and, you know, all this soft stuff. And we all bought it because cold calling's hard. And so we said, oh, well, you know, if Rob Knapp says cold calling sucks, then I can not cold call. Now you've gotten to the point that we say, not only do you not even have to network and go to things, all you got to do now is go on LinkedIn and have a website, and this stuff's going to fall out of the sky into your lap. And I looked at myself and I said, this, it's all nonsense. The old words, I went from $0 to $1 million in this market doing the things that everybody says now doesn't work. And I'm like, that's bullshit. It's hard, as you said, and it can be frustrating, and you've got to have the right mindset going into it. And, you know, I remember Vince Walls when I first got back from training in New York with Morgan Stanley Dean Witter. He said, Rob, the most important word in a rookie's vocabulary is next. You don't want to talk to me? You want to do business with me? Fine. Next. Who's next on the list? And just drive on. And until you've called everybody, you know, run through that cycle, you know, keep going. And then the other thing he told me is that their research told them that the average client bought after the sixth or seventh call, but the average FA called 2 to 3 times.
Right.
But that old stuff does work.
Of course it works. I read Larry Biederman's book. Now, it'll annoy you to read it because it's like written, feels like it's written in 1980. But it's called Smart Marketing. And this is a really interesting story from the coach who tells you what to do but doesn't do it, right? I'm really good at everything, but I don't bother doing much because, frankly, yeah. I'm at a position where I'm, you know, I enjoy the balance in my life. You know, the most important thing is taking my 6-year-old granddaughter out and teaching her golf. And I do it virtually every day. And we both have a ball doing it. We have snacks and we have lunches and picnics. And it's so much fun. So that's what's important. But I'm still a hunter. You know, I'm still a hungry salesman. And I still love the game. So I had a call. I did a webinar with Bill Cates, right? Who I think is terrific. You know, he's the referral coach, and he's really good right. at it. And we had we put it out, and we had 300 people on our webinar. Wow. And I got a bunch of people, you know, emailing. At the end, I said, hey, if you need, somebody said, do you have the 12-month calendar of things to talk about? And I said, well, it's really a 24-month calendar. And yes, I have it, and we don't have time to talk about what's in it, but want to, here's my email, email me. Well, a bunch of people emailed me, and people that I used to know and coached and managed, and so I probably got 4 or 5 coaching engagements out of it without really working hardly at all. And it was so fun doing it. So I thought, Bill Cates, he's, you know, and so I gave him 2 referrals. He showed me, you know, we learned a lot by doing the whole thing. And then, yeah. So one of the guys that was on the call, Mark Warren from MFS, called me and said, I got a new training director who wants to know about Supernova. Call him. Here's his number. So I called him, and he's the one they bought Smart Marketing, Larry Biederman's company. And I said, well, read my book. And maybe we can do something if you guys relate to one of the chapters. Well, I went and got his book, Smart Marketing, read it over the weekend. And guess what? They fit in perfectly with what I teach, because I teach some of the stuff that Larry taught me years ago. So now I've got another guy in my network, right? So I'm going to do a webinar with him on smart marketing. I'm going to do one with Bruce Johnston on using technology to market yourself in the modern, you know, in the COVID world. And I'm working with Touchstone because they have something called PAR, which is how you, they have come in and analyze your practice and tell you which clients you should get rid of and which ones you keep, which ones, so forth. So now, guess what I just am creating, Rob, Sean? I'm creating
a mastermind group.
I'm creating my own mastermind group. So these guys, we're going to do, I'm going to do webinars with all of them. Then I'm going to, so then I thought, okay, now I'm going to have a monthly call with all of them on there and talk about opportunities to do share business, right? And then guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to have a conference at the end of the year with all of them presenting their thing and how it fits into our supernova marketing, supernova multiplier marketing. And we'll do it with Zoom now, but you know, a year from now, we'll do it down in Boca Grande or someplace fun, bring everybody in for the weekend, bring all those guys in and do workshops on this stuff. And you'll come. Because right? I mean, it sounds good. You'd love
it. Absolutely.
You'd love Supernova, and you'd love to get together and see me and meet the. But now I've got something to present rather than come and just have learned Supernova again. Now we can learn specializations in different areas of Supernova that I've used, and these are tacticians, and they all are potential opportunities to teach and create and share. And so
can I give you an idea from your past?
Yeah.
So we hired you and then we stopped working with Richard Wildman just because I like Richard. He's a smart guy, but a little bit of him goes a long way. You know Richard better than I do. I would never read anybody's materials. Never looked at them. Never didn't touch them. But there was this one email that I would get every once in a while, and I read it and I said, that's pretty smart. I like this guy. This guy, some of his stuff's good. His marketing ideas. He's got some good ideas.
Sure.
About processes and not your processes, but more marketing and in internet and this, that. And so one day I called him and I started talking to him. So I said, all right, well, I'm gonna hire you to help me with a couple things, and you know, I'm not going to do a long-term contract with you. We'll do it month to month, but we'll see how it goes. And I just, everything he said was so symbiotic with what we were doing. And then one day I talked to him about, you know, the fact that we were Supernova guys. And he says, well, that's got to be a key part of your strategy. I said, do you know Supernova? He says, oh, yeah, I know it really well. He says, I actually rolled it out to UBS and helped Rob Knapp work for him for a while. I said, get out of here. And he says, yeah. He says, I know. So do you know Rob? You remember Rob Brown?
Yes.
From Encore Partners?
Yes.
So we're working with him. He's helped us develop a process that I want to send you to take a look at, what he calls our signature solution, which is kind of, we meet a client who's confused here and how do we get him to there. And I had an interesting conversation with him because it first started out, two things he said. He's very kind and more soft-spoken than Richard, but he's as direct almost as he is. So the first thing I said to him, he says, well, what do you really want to do? I said, well, you know, I really want to grow the practice. I'd like it to be a $10 million practice and this, that, and the other thing. He said, well, I don't really believe you. And he said, and you don't need anybody to tell you how to do that. And I said, well, that's an interesting response. Why would you say that? He said, well, I never built a $4.5 million practice and you have. So you know more about that than I do. So you're a smart guy. Just take what you're doing now, do twice as much, and you're going to have a $10 million practice. I mean, you don't need anybody to tell you how to do that. And he said, you know, what do you want to have, you know, more fun and more this and more that. And so we talked about, you know, the right people in the book, the wrong people out, some of the things you and I've talked about. But what it really came down to is he said, you know, what you really want, and Sean's really the one that hit on this, is that we bring clients in that lack clarity, understanding, don't understand where they want to be. And I used to say that I want to be in the happiness business. And from my perspective, the element, the primary basic element that you have to have to be happy is you have to have freedom. You have freedom. You just talked about playing golf with your granddaughter. That's freedom.
Yeah.
Get up in the morning. I want to do that. I'm going to do it. But to do that, a person has to have security to know that they're going to be fine, that they can do this and afford to take this time to do these things. And the only way they have that is to have clarity.
So we get people who lack clarity, therefore they don't have security. Without security, they don't have freedom and all these things. And so he said, well, what's your process to bring somebody from high, this is our team, Rob and Sean, to how do you explain to them how you're going to get them there and what's the path and how do you follow it? And we talk, you know, endlessly about, you know, your process and making sure you've got a good plan and this and that. But then Sean happened onto the phrase, which I just think is powerful, and it really changed the dynamics of everything, is I was saying things like, we like clients who are outward focused, not just inward focused, people that are forward looking, not backward looking, and so on and so forth. And finally, Sean said, we want people who are interested in creating meaningful and impactful wealth. And that's what we want to be part of. And so I'll send you the piece that he helped us do, because I think it's perfect. And what I did, Rob, you'll be happy with me for this. We turned it into basically 12 steps. When you first look at it, you're only going to see 9. But there's 12 components, and I'll walk you through it. So now that can be the basis for our quarterly calls for a year, part of them, of our 24-month calendar.
Sweet.
But anyway, he is a rabidus fan of what you do. And he said to me, he said, Rob, if you're really doing 12-4-2, I mean, if he implemented it and you didn't just implement it, but you're executing on it. And I said, we are. And Sean said, hey, man, and Sean basically said, here's our calendar this week. He said, that has to be one of the core parts of what it is that we're telling people how we do things. So he said, you know, he said, there's a lot of people who have read Supernova and people that have gone through it. But he said, people who do it year after year after year, he said, there's not as many of them as you think there should be.
Right.
And further testament to this, Rob, is Rob, like I shared with Rob in the onset of the call, is that, you know, we've gotten 2 prospects in the last month and we're in the process of transitioning those folks in. The one that Rob and I closed last week from UBS, even through all of this, Rob had very little interaction with their financial advisor, felt like there was no collaboration, never engaged in a conversation in which we just did here, you know, for 15 minutes talking about individual equities that he thought were going to be impactful on a go forward basis. You know, we've had conversations with that, you know, with clients around cybersecurity, around, you know, the advent of technology and the marriage between tech and healthcare. And he's like, I'm not getting any of that. I'd like to have an intellectual conversation where I feel that it's a collaborative effort that you and I and you know, the three of us can get on the phone and chat. That way I feel, I mean, it's engaging to me. And he's like, there's a complete lack of that. And anytime I do have a conversation, it's around, oh, well, you need this box and that box to have the, you know, be on the efficient frontier. And he's like, that's not the market that I think we're in, nor the one that I want to participate in. So then we said we did, you know, monthly calls. And some of the best ideas that we get are not only from, you know, guys like yourself, Rob, but, you know, the collaborative effort of all of our clients and engaging in really smart people in that dialogue. He's like, so you're basically a social, I'm hiring you guys as a social network for, to be a organization. Yeah, you get it.
Oh yeah. It was the most fun part of my job as a financial advisor was creating my network of guys and companies that I was interested in. So if I was interested in Teradyn, I went and visited them. I ended up getting a couple executives of Teradyn, and then I would have my network and know what was happening in the book to bill ratio, not from our analysts, but from the company itself. And I would talk to Fred Van Veen about it, and he would tell me what was really going on. Now, that's not inside information. It's public information, but nobody pays any attention to it. So
exactly.
That's why I say, when I find a company like this that's so interesting, I want to go get a center of influence inside that company, not only to help me build my practice around executives from interesting companies, but so I have this robust network of authorities inside each of the major industry groups that I'm interested in. So I think it's a lot of fun. And by the way, Rob Brown was a partner with me at Supernova. I don't know if he told you that or not.
No, he just said that you guys had rolled it out together at UBS and just that he just,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how that all went, but
he was a partner. You know, I keep all the, I've never you know, one of the smartest things I ever did was not have actual partners. I just hired people, but I hired Rob Brown, and he was a coach for me for several years. And Richard Wildman helped roll out Supernova at Merrill Lynch for 2 years. So when
Richard.
Yeah, Richard is a great speaker. I mean, people would always give him the best ratings as a speaker. What I just found was Richard lacks some things, but he's very entertaining. And he makes some great points. But I think the fact that he never was a financial advisor and really didn't, he knows the business, but I always felt he was a little bit too much of an opportunist to have real credibility.
Well, and he's flippant about the business. Oh, just go do it.
He's very flippant.
Well, and you know, what I found was with him, and again, I like him, and you know, if I ever saw him or something, I would be thrilled to talk to him. But you're right, he loves to make speeches. So when you're on the phone with him, he just makes his speech.
Right. And how's that working for you?
Like, all right, well, I've heard this.
Right.
I've heard this speech like 9 times now, Richard. I mean, I get it. I understand it.
Right. But
whatever.
His favorite phrase is, and so how's that working for you?
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, and the other thing is, too, is I got to be candid with you. I mean, one of the things is I was friends with him on Facebook for a while, even though I don't even look at Facebook anymore. But he put some ravenous political stuff out there.
Yeah, I know.
And I was always afraid, boy, if any of the people within the organization knew we worked with him and then they looked him up on Facebook because they met him through me, are they going to think I'm as, you know, as partisan as he is? And so I just thought, man, I'm shocked to be in the business he is that he does that.
Well, anyway, we don't need to spend any more time on Richard, but, you know, Rob Brown probably would not be a partner in my mastermind group, nor would Richard. But they both have skills, and they can bring value to the party. So, you know.
Yeah, I see Rob Brown as kind of a creative mind. He's like an ad guy. Hey, here's your ad. This is what it should look like. This looks a little sexier. This word's a little better. And he's been very good at that. But I don't think it's a sustained relationship that, you know, how do you run the business? How do you do the next thing? How do you do that like yours is? I mean, I think that's the difference, really, frankly, is that you've been in the business from, you know, this is Rob Knapp. The reason for my call today is to make you aware of the exciting opportunities. Click dial tone. You've been through that like I've been through it. And you've also been the guy who sat at the top of the mountain and said, you know, hey, here's what I see. So. Different skill sets.
Well, Yeah, go ahead.
At Merrill Lynch, did you ever know Jim Hayes?
Oh, sure.
So, you know, he's the president of our division now.
He's moved around a little.
He's moved around a little, but where they've got him at right now, and it seems like the guys at the top, the new guys like him, he runs the entire WFA now, Rob. He runs, you know, private wealth where we're at. He runs the wirehouse, which is the old roll up, and he runs the Finet, which is the quasi independent channel. So I don't know if you guys had much of a relationship, but he might not be a bad guy to rekindle with if you haven't talked to him in a while.
Yeah. I mean, he never worked for me. He was, you know, the sales manager, in one of the offices and worked for one of my buddies and then went here and there. And so I knew him then and he came up and did well. And then, you know, I've kind of lost track of him. I mean, I knew he was there.
Somebody told the thing that they always tell us when they're talking about private wealth, did Merrill call their private wealth PGIM? Is that what it was?
He worked with Andy Edelman. I remember, I think he was his sales manager for a while, but he ended up, I think, running private wealth, PBIG is what they called it, PBIG.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So that's what they always say. So he ran PBIG.
Yeah. That was private banking. And
gotcha.
Yeah. So he, you know, that's, you could make your bones by, if you could head up something, it was a big deal. Even though it was a very small part of a firm, and he made his bones there, which was great. So he's a good guy. I just, honestly, part of, I should work harder to do some of this stuff, like I tell you guys to do it, but I don't.
That's cool.
You know, like I know Gorman, and Gorman was a big part of Supernova, but I don't bother to call him. I just, you know,
yeah.
I could. But anyway, so, but he is, he's got a good reputation. He's a good guy.
Good.
Anyway.
Well, I appreciate the tip on the company here. I'm going to try to, I'm going to talk, reach out to my friend. I'll see if I can find anything. And if not, I'm going to reach out to Barry Landau and say, hey, Barry, how can I meet some guys there?
Yeah, I just think it's a, you know, it's one of those that when they pop up, that, you know, they sort of pop up for a reason, you know, I don't know why. And so I don't ignore it. When something gets my attention, I try not to ignore it. Something
right. is not exactly.
A, you know, most of these companies sell at ridiculous, at, you know, they earn no money. I think Palo Alto
right.
still isn't earning any money. You know, they got sales and they sell the price on based on so many times sales and all that stuff. These guys are only like 21 times earnings. So not, you know, they've got real earnings. They're a real company, which I kind of
right.
like from time to time to own a few.
Yeah.
You know, I can go with the concept, but I like occasionally to have, like I own most of the, oh, I own, all, you know, the Lockheed Martins and the security, the, you know, all the defense contractors, because I think they're going to get real productivity increases out of artificial intelligence and robotics. I think this whole
yep.
digital revolution is going to impact them. Did you know, I saw, CNBC this morning, and they were talking about the biggest productivity increase ever, a 10% increase in productivity through this COVID thing. Fascinating.
Wow.
Jeremy Siegel was talking about it, and he also said that the we're getting a productivity increase also because this has given most companies, and I've been talking about this a lot, given the companies a license to lay off people that are unproductive.
Yep.
So they've gotten.
Yeah, I heard Friday, Rob, that we're going to get rid of 10,000 in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think, look, you know, if you don't have people walking into banks, why do you need so many people, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, and Boeing is going to lay off a lot of people and for a lot of reasons, but I guarantee you when they come out of this thing, they're going to be a skinny, fast company and probably one that you want to own. So it's, you know, it's just an interesting time, right? I mean, let us live in interesting times. I think this couldn't be more interesting from an investment point of view. So I'm pretty fired
exactly.
up. Jeremy
good.
Siegel also said that 20 times earnings may be the new norm when you've got zero interest rates. So he said, I really don't think things are overpriced.
Yeah, well, and it sure doesn't look like rates are going to go anywhere anytime soon either.
No, no. So get used to it, right? We're repricing the market.
Exactly.
So anyway, what do you guys want to talk about? What's on your mind?
I think the things that you and Sean were talking about are the things that we're really focused on right now. Clients are nervous. They're listening to one network and then the next, and one network tells them the world's going to hell in a handbasket because of A, and the other one says, well, no, it's going to hell in a handbasket, but it's not A, it's B.
Right.
And what we're finding is the most important thing for us right now is to be that stable voice of reason
And the position that I've always taken and I continue to take is I think there's two important things to always keep in mind. Number one is that I think presidents and administrations get far too much credit when things go well.
Right.
Than they deserve. And I think they get far too much blame when they go badly than they deserve, because markets move in and out of troughs. That's the way the business cycle works. So I'm not overly worked up about, you know, President A versus President B from a stock price standpoint. Secondarily, I don't think the thing that makes this country great is the president or the 535 members of Congress or even the 9 chief justices. I think it's people building companies like we've been talking about here today. So we're working really hard to keep people focused there. And the thing that Sean's talking about is the market, you know, you want to keep thinking about March, but the market is looking ahead. It doesn't look behind. And what it knows is the recession's over. It ended. So it's looking forward and it's pricing forward. And could it get a little over ahead of its skis from time to time? Sure, absolutely. But the general direction is going to be up. We believe that. We believe that we know where rates are for the next couple of years. And, you know, I would say that we're really focused, Rob, on three things. And the three things we're focused on are small caps. And I'll let Sean kind of tell you the way we're positioning this with clients. Long short, because dispersion in this market is at historically high levels and breadth is at historically low levels. And then the third thing is that we do believe that in a world of zero interest rates, where we're working in the preferred space, where we're picking up 4 to 5%, and currently with pretty favorable tax advantages, or even in the short-term corporate space where we can get 2 to 3, or frankly, in the high-quality value equity space where we're getting 3.5 to 4. You know, what we're really saying is that if you think about the income opportunities that are available for the last several years, if you had a 60-40, whatever your fixed income was, it equaled basically zero. Some years were up 2, some years were down 2, but it's been zero. That has dynamically changed, ironically enough, during this period of no interest rates. So, Sean, can you just kind of give Rob a little bit of the things that we're going to be talking about for the next 2 months and see how that lands on him and if he thinks that's consistent with what he's thinking and what our clients would like to be hearing from us?
Sure. Yeah, Rob, we're, you know, as Rob said, over the course of the recovery from the bottom of the market, March 23rd through August, we were implementing positions and customized preferred share portfolios, you know, where clients can, and still can, candidly, go get yields in the 4.25 to 5.25 range. You know, with the, you know, continued commentary from the Fed, Powell basically saying rates are going nowhere for the next 3 years. They're collecting that. And again, it's in the current environment where, you know, those are taxed very favorably at 20%. So to go out and capture a 5% yield at 20%, and, you know, relatively conservative environment, we think is a positive, with the low likelihood of a rise in interest rates anytime soon. Additionally, you know, started to trickle, very small trickle, into the value-oriented space, having conversations with clients that, you know, fortunately, we were very heavily exposed to Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and Adobe. Those four positions in our portfolio probably represent anywhere from 20 to 25% of their equity exposure. So that has rewarded us very nicely. But recognizing that those positions can't carry us, you know, into perpetuity, beginning a position in value-oriented areas. So looking a little bit more at healthcare, looking at REITs, not traditionally commercial real estate, but you know, digital realty centers, American Tower, thinking about, you know, 5G, the advent of technology, real estate, in the same breath that we're having that conversation around technology and healthcare. So we started with a boutique manager out of Wisconsin in the value-oriented space where we're getting about a 4 yield. Now recognizing that new companies, and we're looking for new leadership to, you know, come about after the dislocation that we've seen over the course of the last 6 months, looking at a small to mid-cap manager, Kane Anderson out of Los Angeles, very concentrated portfolio as well, 25 names, very long-term hold mentality. 4 or 5 of the names that they currently hold in their portfolio, they've owned since 07, 08. Very strong track record, low turnover. You know, one of the big names in their portfolio, DocuSign. You know, they're of the belief that you go out, you find good quality names. They're targeting in the small cap market, kind of the 1 to 3 billion, but then they'll hold it as it becomes more mature into the mid cap space up to 30 billion. So, you know, we're looking at that and saying, look, these large cap companies like Apple, who are sitting on $180 billion of cash, they just went out and issued 30-year debt, $8.5 billion at less than 2%. Well, why would a company that's sitting on, you know, that level of cash go out and raise debt? We think they're going to use that capital to go out and buy companies. And we think small and mid-cap companies are going to be a benefactor of the, you know, large-cap companies that are awash in cash. So, you know, going back and doing research and, you know, as Rob has pointed out on, you know, numerous calls, small caps typically outperform large caps by about 20% coming out of a recessionary environment. So we're just having conversations with clients about what's next, repositioning portfolios and not sitting on our laurels to say we can just, you know, assume that Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon are going to go up 50% every year for us and we're going to be fine. And that's really resonated. And that certainly has resonated very well as we've had conversations with these new prospects, because they're not hearing anything like that from their current advisors.
Yeah, I think the other thing, Rob, making all kinds of sense there. And I would also emphasize that we haven't really, I mean, you're starting to see increase dividend increases, but they're just beginning. This new productivity and cash flow, increased cash flow and profitability of these companies, they're going to share it in terms of dividend increases, and they're going to share it in terms of buybacks. So, you know, that factor that into some of your large cap holdings and see, especially if you're going to do the barbell thing with growth and value, look at the value stocks that already have good dividends that probably are going to increase those dividends consistently, particularly, like you said, in healthcare and areas that, most of your industrial companies like Honeywell and things like that are becoming technology companies, right? I mean, they have to.
Right.
And so their artificial intelligence and robotics are finding their way into these industrial companies and making them technology companies. And so they will increase their growth and their profitability and their dividends. So I think that that's makes sense. I got another call, guys. I think you're wonderful. I know this has been sort of a around the world conversation, but I frankly love it. If you do, I hope you do.
We do.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah,
on. Let me know about MANT. What you find? I'm in the process of doing my homework on it, but it looks pretty interesting. It might be a good network for you to get into that piece of the, I think that group can be a core group for you to own. It's not been a great group. I mean, for years, it's finally getting some traction. It's like healthcare. Sometimes you just have to hold these groups and just wait them out. But we know there's growth and we know they're going to work. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So nice job.
Hi, sir. Well, thank you so much for your time.
No, you're
welcome.
Thank you, guys. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.